The famine grinds on over the Near East, and as the hunger gets fiercer, Jacob sends his sons back to Egypt to buy more grain. The men remind him of Joseph's deal. They are not allowed to return unless they bring Benjamin with them. Jacob is angry that they ever told Egypt's prime minister that they had a brother. But it was hard not to, they tell him. All they did was answer his questions. How were they to know that he would order them to fetch Benjamin? The old man's world seems to be falling apart, and he feels desperate. To reassure him, his son Judah promises to look after Benjamin like his personal bodyguard. He tells his father that he will bear the blame all his life should anything happen to his little brother. For him, it is a risk which is worth taking if it saves them all from starvation. Besides, had they returned when Joseph first asked them, they could have gone to Egypt and back twice, he says. And so, out of options, Jacob packs the men up with local delicacies and double the amount of silver as before, half to pay for new grain and half to pay for the previous load. Jacob assumes that it was a mistake that the money came back to him. As all his remaining sons head back to Egypt, laden down with balm, honey, spices, myrrh, pistachio and almonds, Jacob prays that God will send both Benjamin and Simeon safely home. But the old man has to be realistic. He may never see any of the men again, and the promise made to him by God that his family would be as populous as sand in the sea could be over. If I am bereaved, I am bereaved, he says, and the waiting begins. My name is Chas Bayfield, and this is Holy Bible, Episode 13, The Twist. Before we accelerate towards the climax of the book of Genesis, a quick word of warning to newcomers. This is the Bible minus the religion, so don't expect any neat homilies on how to apply the Bible's content to your lives. There are hundreds of podcasts that can do this. My view is that the Bible is for everyone, not just the religious. The Bible I refer to is the Zondervan NIV Study Bible, UK edition. And so, without more preamble, let's see what reception awaits Joseph's brothers in Egypt. As soon as his brothers arrive back in Egypt, Joseph orders an animal to be slaughtered and a feast to be prepared for them. Again, the men are spooked. They assume that this has something to do with the silver which they found in their sacks and predict that Joseph is going to ambush them, seize their donkeys, and enslave them. Deeply concerned, they explain the situation to his steward. The man reassures them that he received their payment and that the silver they found in their sacks was a gift from their god. How the men react to an Egyptian official casually attributing a miracle to the god of their father back in Canaan, Genesis doesn't say. No doubt to their enormous relief, Simeon is released. The men are then taken to Joseph's house, where they're given water to wash their feet and food for their donkeys. They then set out the gifts which they have brought for the great man in whose hands their destiny now appears to sit. When Joseph arrives at the meal, the men bow down. This time, it's all 11 of them, just as he saw in his dreams. He asks if the men's father is still alive, and they bow down again, assuring him that Jacob is alive and well. Joseph then turns his attention to Benjamin, asking if he is the men's youngest brother. He tells the only other son born to Jacob and Rachel his wish that God will be gracious to him, and again, the men must find it unusual how popular the God who they worship back home has become among Egypt's ruling elite. Unable to contain himself at seeing Benjamin again, Joseph runs off to find a place where he can bawl his eyes out. Regaining composure, he returns in prime ministerial pomp and orders the feast to begin. The brothers are unsettled yet again when they are arranged at their table in order of age, and when they are fed from Joseph's table, Benjamin receives 5 times as much food as anyone else. This is yet another sign of Joseph's affection for his only full-blood brother among the 12, but the others can only wonder why Pharaoh's second in command is favouring him. Joseph's brothers are right to suspect foul play, but they could not possibly have imagined what happens next. Before his brothers return to Canaan, Joseph orders his steward to fill their sacks with as much food as they can carry and to return their silver again. However, he wants a precious silver cup to be placed in the sack belonging to Benjamin. It's possible that he frames Benjamin to see if the boy is abandoned by his brothers just like he was. That way, he will know whether they have changed their ways or not. Early the next morning, the men set off, but while they are still relatively close to the city, Joseph sends his steward after them. The man is to search their bags, find the silver chalice, and accuse the brothers of repaying his generosity and hospitality with evil. Once apprehended, the men are appalled at the accusation. They even return the extra silver that made it back into their sacks last time, they tell the steward. Why then would they need to steal treasure from the great man's house? If any one of them has the cup they promise, that man will die and the rest will become the steward's slaves. It's a hugely rash statement given Judah's promise to act as Benjamin's personal bodyguard. Even so, the steward seems overly lenient and agrees to simply enslave the man in whose sack he finds the missing silverware. Their consciences clean, the brothers present their packs for inspection, but to their horror, the silver cup is found in Benjamin's sack. The men tear their clothes in absolute despair. This is the end of the road for them, their little brother, their father, and their family. Broken, they are taken back to the city where they throw themselves at Joseph's feet. Keeping up the charade of being an elite pagan, their brother wants an explanation. Don't they know that he is powerful, that he can use magic to divine things, that he would know that they had stolen from him? Judah speaks on behalf of the others. He has no explanation. God has uncovered their guilt and they must now become Joseph's slaves. It's a grimly ironic moment. The men are innocent of theft, but guilty of plotting to kill their brother, beating him and selling him for a few silver coins. Joseph refuses Judah's offer. He doesn't want 11 slaves, just the guilty man. The rest are to return to Canaan. It is now that Judah unleashes one of the most impassioned and heart-rending speeches in the Bible. Judah sums up the story so far for Egypt's de facto leader. He asked them if they had a father or brother, and they explained that their father had a son born to him in his old age, that the boy's brother is dead, that he is the only one of his mother's sons left, and that his father loves him. Joseph asked them to bring this brother to Egypt, but they assured him that their father would die if the boy ever left him. Even so, Joseph insisted that the deal was off if Benjamin didn't make the journey, and so they explained this to their father. He then recounts how his father suggested that they return to Egypt for food and how they reminded him that the journey was only possible with Benjamin in tow. Jacob's response was that he only had two sons with Rachel. One was torn to pieces, and if anything happens to the other, it will be the end of him. Referring to his brothers as your servants, Judah explains that Benjamin's life is so tied up with Jacob's well-being that returning home without him is effectively the same as bringing the grey head of his father down to the grave in sorrow. Judah tells Joseph how he personally vouched for his little brother and how he promised his father that if anything happened to him, he would bear the blame all his life. He begs Joseph to take him as his servant instead of Benjamin. Anything so as not to have to personally witness his father's utter brokenheartedness. It's too much for Joseph, who orders all his staff to leave them. Now alone with his brothers, his composure breaks and he wails so loudly that everyone hears him anyway. "I am Joseph," he tells them in Hebrew. "Is my father still living?" No answer comes from the 11 men kneeling at his feet. This is Joseph. This is the man who they sold into slavery, who they lied to their father about, who now rules Egypt, and they are terrified. It's hard to imagine the mix of fear and shame felt by Joseph's older brothers when Joseph finally reveals that he is the one who they attacked and sold. Given what has happened to him because of their actions, and given the power that now rests in his hands, Joseph's response is nothing short of remarkable. Proving that forgiveness is one of the most powerful tools in the box, he tells the men not to feel bad about what they did. God must have planned it this way so that he could save so many lives during the famine, he says. He explains that they are only 2 years into the 7-year food shortage and that God has simply sent him ahead to preserve a plot of land for his family in this land of plenty so that their lives will be saved. Joseph urges them to fetch their father. They are to tell the old man that Joseph has sent for him and that God has put his lost son in charge of Egypt. Jacob, his children, grandchildren and all their flocks and herds are now to relocate to Goshen, which is believed to be on the eastern bank of the Nile, just north of Memphis. Joseph promises to provide for his family so that they don't lose everything they own because of the famine. He tells Reuben and the others that they must be able to see that he is their brother, especially Benjamin. The older 10 might be able to remember him from when he was 17, but the youngest might share a proper physical resemblance, given that he and Joseph have the same mother and father. He urges them again to share the good news with Jacob and to bring him here quickly. Weeping, Joseph then hugs Benjamin and the others, who finally realise that all is well, that they are not going to die, and that this impossibly important man not only is their own flesh and blood, but appears to have forgiven them. News about the reunion travels to Pharaoh, who orders the brothers to fetch everyone they left behind in Canaan. He then promises them the best land in Egypt and even provides carts for their children to travel here in. He tells the men to not bother fetching any of their belongings as everything that they want in Egypt is theirs. Joseph provides his brothers with new clothes and loads their animals with food for the journey. Benjamin is given 5 sets of clothing and almost 8 pounds of silver, while Jacob is sent 10 donkeys loaded with the best produce that can be found in Egypt. With these come another 10 donkeys whose packs are filled with grain, bread and other comestibles to keep him going on his move to Goshen. Egypt's number 2 then sends his brothers off, and his advice to not quarrel on the way could be seen as either a little pointed or another of the Old Testament's rare comedy moments. For Jacob, the news about the son who he thought died years earlier is too good to be true. The old man doesn't believe a word of it. It's only when he sees the cart and the splendour in which his sons have arrived home that he begins to think the unthinkable. Joseph is alive. How his sons break the news to him that they not only lied to him but sold his precious child to slave traders, the Bible doesn't say. Joy appears to trounce anger, and, convinced that his son is alive, Jacob sets off for Egypt to see him one more time before he dies. On their way, the family passes through Beersheba, the place where both Jacob's father and grandfather dug wells and found water. Here, Jacob offers sacrifices to the God who he believes encouraged and sustained them, possibly out of concern that in leaving his country, he is leaving his God. According to Genesis, God calls out to him, reassuring him that he will not only follow him to Egypt, but will turn him into a great nation, before bringing him home again to Canaan. He also promises Jacob that it will be Joseph's own hand that will close his eyes when he dies. Now fully believing that his son is alive, Jacob brings everything he owns, as well as all his son's wives and children, to Egypt. In all, 66 people journey with him to join Joseph, his wife and 2 sons. All 66 are named in the book and include Ur and Onan, suggesting that the events described earlier in Genesis that lead to their deaths take place after the move. When they are near, Jacob sends Judah ahead to get directions from Joseph to their new home. Joseph rides out to meet the Canaanite caravan in his chariot and, overjoyed to finally see his father again, he throws his arms around him and weeps. Jacob now feels that his life is so complete that he is ready to die. Finally, the family is together again. In the midst of the hardship of famine, he has not only been thrown a lifeline, it is his beloved son who has come back from the dead and thrown it. Joseph may be the second most important man in the country, but allowing 70 people from Canaan to settle in Egypt needs official rubber stamping from Pharaoh himself. He gives his brothers a team talk before they meet Pharaoh and shares his plans with them. He will tell the king that his father and brothers have arrived from Canaan, that they are herdsmen and have brought their livestock along with everything they own to Egypt. The men are to stick to a pre-agreed script. They are shepherds, tend livestock, and are entirely self-sufficient. Pharaoh will then allow them a plot of land where they can settle away from any Egyptians. For some reason not explained by the Bible, shepherds are detestable to them. Joseph takes 5 of his brothers to meet Pharaoh, who listens to their story. They explain that they have come here to ride out the famine, as there is nowhere for their flocks and herds to graze back in Canaan, and they ask permission to settle in Goshen. Pharaoh not only grants them some prime real estate, but tells them that if any of them are particularly good at husbandry, they can look after his own animals. Clearly proud of his father, Joseph brings Jacob to meet Pharaoh, who is impressed at the patriarch's great age. By now, Jacob is 130 years old. Jacob blesses Pharaoh, and Joseph makes sure that his entire family is settled in their new home and that they all have plenty to eat. The country, however, is still suffering from a complete absence of harvests. The famine is so severe that even when the people have spent all their money, they still don't have enough to eat. Having brought his family safely out of Canaan, the threat of starvation is still uncomfortably real. Has Joseph done enough to prepare for the tough times ahead? And with his father now old and weak, will he finally turn on the brothers who long ago turned on him? Genesis season finale is next. Holy Bible is written and produced by me, Chaz Bayfield, with music by Michael Old and John Hawkins Music. Cover art is by Lisa Goff. Please send any comments or feedback to contact@holybible.com.